B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Drummer Roy Mayorga is my guest today in the Talking Rock or Meltdown podcast. Of course, he's in Stone Sour. Now he's in Hell Yeah. We talk about how he got there, the conversations that took place. As Chad Gray told me a couple weeks ago, he kind of talked to Corey Taylor to get the ball rolling to see if Roy, who's Stone Sour's drummer, was available to play in Hell Yeah.
Basically, they had a conversation about a conversation, and then we had a conversation about a conversation.
Here we are. We shared some pretty fun stories about the late, great Vinnie Paul and how he got into Vinnie's mindset to play some of these songs and get prepared to get behind the kit in Hell Yeah.
I've lived and breathed Hell Yeah, and to the point where I was even listening to all the Pantera stuff to really get Vinnie's character playing.
Literally, that's just the tip of the iceberg as far as this conversation is concerned. Drummer Roy Mayorga is my guest today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
I always like to start out the podcast by saying thank you guys so much for listening to it. This is Meltdown, the Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast. I do appreciate you guys punching up. There's a big world out there full of podcasts, and the fact that you guys listen to this one is really humbling. Thank you very much for listening. If you like this podcast, a 5-star rating, write a review, share it with your friends, and most of all, just enjoy it. Hey, made some pretty big news yesterday as far as the podcast is concerned, talking with Slash, and he talked about the new music from Guns N' Roses coming out. I mean, it's been over 25 years since we've heard new music from like the core members of Guns N' Roses. So we'll talk about that coming up here with Rock News with Al Beck, and Steve Black joins us as well. News on Megadeth, Ace Frehley, Papa Roach celebrating their 20th anniversary next year of their debut record, which I talked to with Jerry Horton a couple weeks ago from Papa Roach, and Elton John in the Rocket Man movie. But first, let's get to Roy Mayorga today, as he's now the drummer for Hell Yeah. Of course, the passing of Vinnie Paul is coming up on the one-year anniversary here in just a couple of weeks. And really sad to think that Vinnie and Dime are both gone. But anyways, I got to thank my friend Johnny Chow from Stone Sour for setting me up with this interview with Roy. I know Chow for many, many years. I know Roy a little bit. I've kind of, hung out with him here and there at different concerts and different events and stuff like that. So he's not like, a good friend of mine or nothing, but a super nice guy. And he's my size. So that always makes it better, too, about 5'6", 5'7", something like that. But just a killer drummer, a really good talent, and I couldn't be happier for him to sit behind the kit now from the band Hell Yeah. So anyways, right off the bat, just wanted to thank him for taking the time out and talking with us, and I hope you guys dig this. It's Roy Mayorga today on Talkin' Rock.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, man.
That's awesome. Hey, first, before we get into Hell Yeah and stuff, let's just talk a little bit about Stone Sour in your last couple years. Chow said you earned the nickname Spiller.
Yeah, I did. Well, I guess it's now public knowledge. Thanks, Chow. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I have a tendency of walking into rooms and pretty much spilling anything that's liquid-based, so... And to all you guys out there listening, just keep all your drinks and shit away from me, because I'll just spill it all over you.
And he also said, tell him Vafankulu.
Vafankulu? Oh, yeah. He go, hey, go fuck yourself. Yeah, plus, not as Italian. Vafankulu. Hey, Vafankulu. Yeah. Oh, my God. All right, so this is turning into a personal thing now between him and I?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, there you go. I think I did text him. I say, give me something to talk to Roy and bust his chops about. So that's what he gave me. So tell me about the last couple of years of Stone Sour. I know I talked with a Chow about that. I mean, you guys, you've been in the band for a long time. Chow just joined, before this last record and stuff. You guys got to feel like a real real band touring, the Cycler doing the whole stuff. Tell me about it.
Since we've been this last 2 years, man, we've gotten really tight as a band, and the brotherhood's there, the vibe's there. It's been great, We got together and made some magic, man, Got together and wrote music together live at the same time, not separately like we used to, and I think that definitely added a lot added a big element to this record and to this tour.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, obviously, you know, Josh had his issues, which he's talked about a lot, you know, and stuff, when he had to leave the band and that. And then you guys, of course, you guys were all like 100% behind him and helped him out as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we that's what we do for each other, you know?
Yeah. Now, talk about the last record and stuff. I mean, that record did pretty well for you guys. I think 187 shows or something along those lines. You guys toured around the world. So, yeah, man, you guys really beat the path after that record was released.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest tour that we've ever done. I mean, since I've been with the band now, like 13 years I've been with them, I've done several tours of it. This tour has definitely been the longest and the most successful.
Yeah.
For sure.
And in working with Corey and stuff, what kind of stuff do you take away from Corey? That's one of those guys that he never like lets the grass grow beneath his feet. I mean, what kind of stuff does Corey teach you?
Well, he teaches me not to spill.
Right.
I mean, we all learn from each other, man. You know, we grow together. We learn from each other. You know, we just live and just learn, live and learn, man. That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
So then, the Stone Sour thing starts to come to an end. You know, you see that coming around now. In the back of your mind, I mean, obviously, you guys are in a really weird situation as far as bands are concerned. I really can't think of another band that really does this, where you know that you're going to have a couple years off because Corey's going off to do Slipknot now. So in the back of your mind, are you kind of already starting to think of things to fill your time with, to work, to do, or what?
Just worked on Wednesday 13's album, doing all the synthesizer work for him, and just doing some producing, some mixing. You know, that's basically all I've been doing. And working on my own stuff with my modular synthesizer setup. I just played my first live show with that setup for an art show here in downtown LA for Jonah Nimoy. His art installation that basically made music to his artwork.
While really?
People were there checking it out. Yeah. I brought my whole rig and just set up and went to town, made some improvised and took everybody on a journey. That's basically what I'm going to be working on when I'm not playing music. I just want to do that kind of stuff and get more into that world and, you know, get the path of scoring some films.
I was just going to say, you've done that before, right? To a certain degree, right?
I have, yeah. But I want to establish myself more as that, you know, in the coming years, you know, other than just being a drummer. So there's a lot more I can do than just playing drums. And I want to show everyone that, you know.
Now, would that be something along lines of where where have you ever like met or contacted like Trent Reznor? He's done a lot of that kind of stuff.
I don't know him really.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody in that camp. I'm sure I'll meet him one day, you know.
So that kind of stuff was like kind of in the back of your mind when Stone Sour was coming to a close, that's how you're going to fill your time and make a living in that. And then when do you get the call about Hell Yeah?
I got the call for Hell Yeah about a month and a half ago. So, and got a call a month and a half ago and, you know, went forward with it.
Now, I talked to Chad a couple weeks ago or something. He said that he had kind of felt Corey Taylor out a little bit, you know, to kind of see if you'd be available and to kind of give you the heads up so he wouldn't be cold calling you.
Yeah, yeah. He basically, they had a conversation about a conversation, and then we had a conversation about a conversation. Now here we are. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It was cool how it worked out. I'm happy to be there to help the guys and honor our brother, our friend Vinny. You know, it's an honor, man.
Yeah,
it's bittersweet. You know, it's horrible thinking about it. It's like he's not here anymore. You know, it's fuck. You know, it's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary. You know, I know that because I would text him all the time about hockey, and, of course, I was pulling for his team so much. I think the most I ever texted him with was after Vegas lost their final game in the playoffs, and he was texting me back and forth all night long, it seemed like. But, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary. So tell me about the first time you met VP. Do you remember?
I do, actually. The first time I met Vinny was 98 Ozfest, Milton Keynes Bowl in England. I was playing drums for Soulfly at the time, and I can remember while I was playing the show, I turned around to get to grab a water, and 10 feet away from me was Vinny with his arms crossed, giving me this grin, going, "Yeah!" And I was like, "Oh my God, it's Vinny!" And next to him was Dave Grohl. So yeah, no pressure. I got to meet him afterwards. I hung out with him, and we've been friends ever since. You know, he's a really cool dude, man. His energy was great. As soon as I saw him behind me, it made me fucking play even better and harder. And you know, he's definitely a big influence on me and every drummer that I know. You know, he's big influence on everybody, big inspiration on everybody, drumming wise.
Yeah, you know? I got to imagine, not being a musician or whatnot, but the kind of guy that he was, that he would pump up your tires no matter, you know, what kind of band you were in.
You can't say no to him.
Yeah, yeah.
You cannot say no. He's the life of the party, man. You walk into a room, he light that fucker up. You know, he was that kind of person. He was like, his personality was big. His heart was big. You know, he's fucking, he's Vinnie Paul, man.
Yeah. So you get
one
the
of a kind, dude.
You get the call, and I mean, you must have been flooded with emotion on this after that phone call.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. I was like, you really want me to do this? You're like, yeah. I'm like, fuck. Okay. I didn't know. I didn't know what to say on that. So, other than, of course, I'll do it. You know, you're my friends, and you know, Vinny was my friend, and yeah, I'm there. Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess part of it's probably, you know, obviously a big part of it is you want to pay honor to your fallen brethren, and another part is you want to keep his memory alive and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I'm just here. You know, borrowing a hat, helping him and the band carry the torch, man. That's it. No filling shoes, none of that stuff. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, some big shoes to fill. But I keep saying, look, it's not about filling shoes. No one can fill his shoes. His shoes are with him, and that's it. And I'm here just helping the band and honoring him. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah, that's kind of what Chad told me, that he kind of had a conversation with you. You know, just we're just going to carry on the legacy. We're going to honor our friend VP, you know, and that whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, as Chad puts it, it was a match made in heaven.
Yeah, man, it was really sweet of him to say that.
Yeah.
The guys are great. The guys are awesome, man. You know, I'm really happy this all ended up how it ended up, like with helping them out. It's great.
Yeah,
it's really great.
What are some of the challenges as far as drumming for Hell Yeah, or is it just to pay homage to Vinny? Is that the big challenge?
Oh yeah, I mean, like, the challenge is just to learn his parts. You know, I mean, he's got such a way of playing. Like, it's just hard to really imitate. You know, there's nuances that he has that only he can do. The best I can do is just try to, you know, channel what he's done and marry it to obviously how I play and just make it work. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so
marry the live version to how the studio version is, and then to how he plays it, and then to how I play it, and then, you know, getting the chemistry with the band. I mean, there's a lot of things involved. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, Chad says you've really been practicing day and night. Is that right?
Oh my God! Yeah. I mean, as soon as I got the phone call, I mean, there was no wasting time. I mean, I went into it and head first and just learned as many songs as I can from the Hell Yeah catalog. I was doing like 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, between the hours my kids at school, you know, from like, you know, 10 to like four, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In the afternoon, and lived and breathed Hell Yeah. And to the point where I was even listening to all the Pantera stuff to really get Vinny's character of playing, and then listening to his favorite drummers and getting into that, you know, like listening to guys like Alex Van Halen even more, because I know that was his favorite drummer. And John Bonham, obviously, that's our common bond, I think, with every drummer. That's his favorite drummer. That's my favorite drummer. So trying to keep all that in mind and keep him in mind, that's what really helped me to get this going. So
yeah, that's really interesting. It's almost like an actor trying to get into a role and stuff. So how much of your drumming do you have to change to do what Vinny does? Like I said, I'm not a drummer, so I'm coming at it from a totally, you know, I don't know anything about this.
Definitely have to change. I mean, I definitely change a lot. I mean, to the point where I even changed my setup a bit more. I'm using bigger drums than I normally do. Like, the front of my drum kit changed a bit. I mean, I went from a size 12, 13 tom to a size 13 to 16 tom just to get bigger, a bigger sound, because his sound's fucking huge, you know? Mm-hmm. So now my drums are like, you know, 13, 16, 18 inch, you know, toms. And actually, you know what? I'm probably going to keep it that way. I just feel so comfortable. I'm like, I should have done this long time ago. I'm even like starting to play with the back end of my sticks again, which I haven't done in years. And for this kind of music, it definitely calls for that. You know, it's more simple and, like more like, you know, punch and move, you know, like a heavyweight boxer would do. You have to just punch, stick and move kind of thing. You know what I mean? Not with a little bit of grace, a little bit of gracefulness in between, but fucking meat and potatoes, fucking bang that shit, hit that drum, you know, make it sing, make the room sing, you know?
Yeah. Vinny was always fun to watch, and he was always
fucking awesome to watch.
Man, yeah. He always looked like he was having so much fun back there.
Oh yeah, a smile for days. I mean, like, and the big thing, the real thing with Vinny though, it was about his feet though. He had the sickest footwork I've seen on any drummer,
right?
Ever. I mean, I think every drummer out there would agree with me. The becoming is probably his ultimate footwork. It's the weirdest thing. Like, he leads with his left foot on that, and all his double triplets on his right, it's backwards. In fact, I can remember there was one time when we were on tour together, and I was on my practice kit, and he just happened to be walking past the dressing room, and I was playing Becoming, but differently, and obviously wrong. He walks past my room, and he's like, "Malaga!" I'm like, "What, man?" He always called me by my last name, too. He never called my first name. He's like, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, playing Becoming. He's like, "That's not how you do it." I'm like, "Well, please fucking show me." So he gets on my kit and shows me, like, it's the other way, you know? It's like keeping time with your hi-hat. You got let your left foot's got to be keeping the time, and your right's doing the doubles. And he's breaking it down to me, like, really slow. And it's like, holy shit. And I still can't do it to this day. It's a mind fuck, man. Like, your left should be doing what your left should be doing what your right's doing. And then you have to, the top half of you has got to be doing what the right and left is doing. It's bizarre. Some people can do it. God bless you. I wish I can. I cannot. Good life of me.
What tour was that? What band were you playing with?
Stone Sour, Hell Yeah, and Avenged Sevenfold, and we did Europe and England together. It was a fucking awesome tour. It was like 2010, I think.
Huh.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Well, yeah, you must have all sorts of Vinny stories, eh?
Yeah, I got some good ones. I'll tell you that another time.
I'll tell you, the last time I saw Vinny was at the House of Blues in Vegas, and I got it pinned to my my Twitter, and man, he was hammered, but he wanted to shoot a video with me. I'm like, okay, fine, let's do this. And right,
he's
at
the best, man.
Right at the very beginning, you can hear him go, "All right, is that thing on? Let's go." I'm like, yeah, okay, let's do it. You know, but
he always had the party on his bus, man. His bus was amazing. I remember one of the last times hanging out with him was at Chicago Open Air. It was like 2017, and Chad was I met up with Chad in the parking lot. I was like, "Oh, where's everybody?" He's like, "Oh, everyone's on the bus. You want to come?" I'm like, "Sure, let's go." So it was like, you know, half hour to bus call, so I wanted to go and, you know, say hi to Vinny and, you know, have a drink with everyone. So dead quiet outside this bus, right? He opens the door, and it's like, it was like hilarious. It was like a serious air seal on this door. You didn't hear a fucking peep outside this bus. So I open the bus. There's fucking crazy disco lights and smoke machines and shit in the front lounge. There's 20 people crammed in there. People from like Lamb of God. All these people were just crammed in there, like drinks spilling everywhere. And there's Vinny sitting down. "Malaga, come over here." I'm like, "Holy shit, what is going on here?" He's like, "What the hell do you think is going on?" I'm like, "Well, it's fucking raging in here. Have a drink." And it was a good night, man. It was me, him, Jose Meng, and a bunch of other people. It was a lot of fun, man. I'll never forget that night. It was a really good night.
I remember the guys from Drowning Pool would tell me that they would try to hide from the Abbott Brothers because it'd be like 4 in the morning. They just want to go to bed, and those guys would be busting their parties and stuff.
And like I said, you cannot say no.
Yeah.
He will not let you say, you can't say no. Because you see that, you see him, you see that face, that grin, that happy smile, that the good vibe that comes off of, that radiates off of any, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Either of them, you know, so.
Man,
I'll miss that dearly. I think we all will.
So how much are you looking forward to hitting the road with this band?
I can't wait, man. I can't wait to do this with them.
Yeah, that's
I'm really looking forward to it, man.
And
it's going to be good.
And you've heard all the new songs. You're learning all them too.
So I'm already learning a couple new ones right now. Obviously, Welcome Home, 333. I already got. I'm just waiting for the guys to let me know what else to listen to, what to learn.
Now, is there a big difference between, like, you know, putting your headphones on and maybe playing your drums in your house or whatever, and then actually jamming with the band? Like that's got to be a huge difference, right?
Huge difference. Yeah, I mean, when you're playing to the record, you're obviously slaving to the tempo of the record. Now, when you go to play with the band, you're the tempo and clock keeper, so they have to play to you, and you vice versa. And sometimes their nuances are different to the record. You know, they might pull back and slow things down on a verse and push it on a chorus, kind of thing. You know, it's completely different animal. You know.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about working with lead singers? Like, I mean, you did so many shows with Corey and stuff, and I'm guessing he has some sort of cadence, and Chad might be a little bit different, right, or no?
Oh, yeah. Every singer's different. Like, Corey and I definitely have our cues, and, you know, we cue off each other a lot now, to the point where we don't really have to look at each other. We just kind of know. I look at, you know, hand gestures or head nods or whatever Corey does. I haven't gotten that down with Chad yet. We're just, you know, it's just learning each other. When we definitely got it down pretty good for that week. You know, we were together before the Vegas show. Like, I'm learning some his signals, his head signals, his eyes, his looks. You know what I mean? Takes a minute, you know.
Yeah, and of course, Chad, does he have to pronounce your name with the rolling tongue R's like Corey does?
Well, he doesn't have to, but it's nice. It'd be nice if he did. That's his Corey, man. Fucking just, you know, hamming it up with my name, and I thought it was pretty funny when he first did that. Actually, the first time Corey did that is when I first joined the band, and my first show was I think the first show in Europe was Download. He introduces me my full name, even my middle name. I looked at him like, you son of a bitch. Corey turns around and gives me this fucking shit-eating grin, like, fuck. It was fucking awesome, man. I fucking love Corey, man. I mean, we talk every week, man. We have like a big band text thread. We always talk.
And I'm sure that Corey, you know,
we're always talking shit to each other.
Right, yeah. And I'm sure that he probably told you many times about the Dokken record I gave him, where he looked at me and said, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? So, anyways.
No. What Dokken record?
We went record shopping when you guys played here in February at that EMU Convocation Center, and you guys were jamming earlier that past summer to all the 90s stuff during the meet and greet, so I had an extra Dokken Into the Fire record, so I gave it to him.
Nice. That's a good record.
Hey, yeah, it's a great record. Hey, you just brought up, Wild Mick Brown. Who doesn't like Wild Mick Brown, right? So, you just brought up the show in Vegas. I was going to ask you about that, too. So, how'd that go for you, from your point of view?
It was great, man. You know, it was, you know, obviously very, you know, it was very emotional, but beautiful, man. It was great to, you know, it was good for the guys, and I met a lot of people that night I had never met before. A lot of Vinny's old friends and some people from Pantera crew, Pantera days, and it was a big celebration, man. And that's what he wanted, you know. It was a good send off for him, you know.
Man, it's got to feel like the, I mean, the spotlight has to feel like it's right on you, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. the spotlight was on Vinny that night and his drums, and
right.
it will remain to be. So I'm just there to help, like I said.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool. Well, you're coming back through here in mid-August or whatever. Maybe we'll hook up for a cocktail or something. But, Roy, I got to thank you so much for your time and good luck, and thanks for doing this for me.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me, man. I'm looking forward to hanging out.
There he is, talking rock and meltdown, Roy Mayorga today.
There we go.
On the big show. There you have it.
Yeah.
So good for him, man. Really pumped up that he got the spot there to, not as you said, not to fill the shoes, but just to carry on the memory of Vinnie Paul. I thought it was kind of interesting. And Steve Black joins us here along with Al Beck. But Steve, you're a musician and stuff. And I thought it was kind of interesting how he mentioned, you know, playing the drums and stuff. That, you know, each drummer and each musician, I suppose, does little different things here and there. And you got to kind of learn those intricacies as far as like how that's concerned.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, personality comes through in every instrument.
Yeah,
no question.
Something I'll never know, I suppose. I gave up that dream a long time ago.
Yeah. A dream of having a personality.
Well, yes. that
it
too.
Is not too late. It is not too late.
That is on my top 10 things to do is get a personality. You know, I always said, you know what, if I can't play the guitar and just, you know, play like Ted Nugent, why bother? But then I'm like, you know what, I've been playing hockey for you know, over 40 yeah. years, and I can't stick handle like Pavel Datsyuk, but I still do that.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
If you get enjoyment out of it, do it. Simple as that.
Yeah.
That
That's
might
how
be
I
thing.
Am with my instruments. I bass, drums, and guitar. Terrible at all of them, but I play well enough to entertain myself. And that's all that matters. I'm not about to go out on tour, and I have no, you know, delusions of grandeur that I'm going to, you know?
But it would be kind of cool to, like, you know, meet up with a band or something. Hey, let me see that bass and just start playing some bass lines. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll rip out the Super Mario Brothers theme. That's about all I know on bass.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, anyways, well, we haven't talked about Green Hornets yet, and that's always a plus on the show, especially when these two guys get together. Yeah, hey, Steve, give your podcast a plug real fast before we start with the news here.
This week, an interesting turn of events on the Sound Of. We often do our top seven lists, and because Elton John is actually Ann Carlini's all-time favorite, we do our top seven Elton John songs, but I'm not really a fan, so it was pretty hard
sure.
to do.
I gotta admit, there are some good Elton John songs. Listen, you can't listen to that Tiny Dancer song without thinking about that movie, right?
Right, and that made my top seven list.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
So it was interesting to try and
It's about time that you have to hit the curveball. Usually you're throwing them at them. So
So that's the Sound Of podcast. You can check that out right here where you get your podcast here in Beasley and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So you're also on the other podcast. It's normally recording at this time.
Yeah, ordinarily. Yeah, myself and James from The Morning Show and Chuck Bean. We do Nerd Radio, all things comics, TV shows, video games, all that good stuff. And that's also a part of B-Pod Studios.
Enough of plugging your old podcast. So let's talk about the news, the rock news.
Sure.
So what's going on? What's the first story you got?
First story, dude, big news that Slash has come out and he has confirmed Guns N' Roses is working on new material.
He is?
He is.
He said that?
Yes, he did, somewhere.
Who did he say it to?
I don't know, some guy.
He said it right here in this podcast.
Oh, well, I don't listen to this podcast.
Well, so. I know that.
But it's all over the internet.
You only fast forward to your spots, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I came in today and I said to Steve, I go, yeah, you know, it's really cool because Slash, you know, said that they're going to be recording stuff. And Steve, you made it sound like, you know, that that this was kind of common knowledge, but I had never heard that they actually were going to record stuff. I mean, everyone hoped and everyone, you know, they wanted some stuff done. So I think this is a pretty big thing.
Yeah, I guess what I'd been reading was we have plans to, we are going to, but this actually confirmed we have started.
Yeah.
And that's a different story. We're going to, well, everybody says we're going to. This is a different, you know, you've hit a different parameter when it's like, yeah, we were recording last week. I mean, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and then I was thinking about this on the way in today. What was the last stuff that Guns N' Roses actually recorded with, like, well, for the most part, the core original guys? Was it the User Illusion stuff?
Yeah.
Had to have been, right?
Yeah, yep, one
so,
or two.
Yeah, 1992, or 91, I guess that'd be. And so then, and I was looking at a picture today. I actually posted on my Instagram at WRIF Meltdown, and it's like a picture of myself and Slash and Gilby Clark, and that was taken around 1994 or something. And we talked also in that interview, and I know you know about this, Steve, is the fact that that they did jam with Zakk Wylde, and he talked about that story.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
He had the studio name and everything. So if you haven't heard that podcast, it was the one that we just did with Slash on the Talkin' Rock and Meltdown podcast. He also talked about a movie that Al has yet to see, The Dirt.
No, I've seen The Dirt.
You have? Oh, The Dirt. Oh, you have seen
Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's right. Okay.
At this point, I actually do want to see Bohemian Rhapsody, but I feel like I can't at this point.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's been so long and it keeps coming up, but The Dirt I did see.
Now, you saw it, right?
See, no, I feel that way about The Dirt.
I'm haven't seen it?
I missed the buzz. I'm good.
Yeah. No, well, there's that scene where Nikki famously ODs, of course, mm-hmm. anyways, kicks my heart and the whole thing. And if you watch it carefully, the camera kind of pans around the room and there's a guy that looks like Slash sitting on the bed or on the couch.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was him or, and to be honest with you, the first few times I saw, I didn't even catch it, but I saw something about it like on the internet somewhere, right? And so I just asked him, I go, is that you? He goes, yeah. See, it's Nikki. He told me, gave me a nod. And he went through the whole story about how they're at this guy's house and he named off names. Steven Adler was right down there, blah, 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 blah. You know, the whole thing. So it was kind of interesting listening to hear Slash talk about that particular thing. He said that he was so hammered and so on, whatever. They had the paramedics or his girlfriend or something put him in the shower just to sober him up a little bit, you know?
Wow.
So that's how they lived back then. So anyway, so you're saying that there is a chance.
I'm saying there's a chance. One
just because they started recording doesn't mean they'll be finished in this decade.
That's true.
You know, at the end of the interview, he kind of alluded that next year. So
although I will say every Guns N' Roses album that included Slash was done in a pretty reasonable amount of time. It was the only album without him that took 13 years.
I wonder if there's a certain part of Axl that, you know, was maybe afraid to, you know, put out something without those guys or whatever. I'm not sure. You know, Bumblefoot is a friend of ours and stuff, and it's interesting to think about, but, you know, he was he talked about this with me a few times. It's like by the time they started that record and finished it, technology had changed so much. Yep. The world was a different place. And, you know, and I love Chinese Democracy. So,
yeah, I like it a lot, too. I think it's a very underrated album.
And the last concert those guys did at Los Angeles at the end of their one run, I think they played for 4 hours. It was like 3 hours and 58 minutes. And they played a lot of Chinese Democracy songs. So Slash and the guys learned them. So, well, looking forward to seeing what happens with this moving forward. But let's move forward here with the rock news.
Yeah.
As far as Megadeth is concerned, talking about some records they're going to reissue, which aren't even that old.
Some, new old music that's not that old. Yeah. They're going to be doing a couple of reissues for United Abominations, Endgame, and also 13, which are, you know, when we originally were kind of talking about the story off mic, they're older than I was thinking off the top of my head, but still not all that old. United Abominations was 07, Endgame 09, and 13 was 2011. But it was, you know, like I see, you know, the release dates for Megadeth. I'm like, oh, the new album. Nope, it's reissues. But if you want to pick those things up, July 26th is going to be the date those will be available. So we've been looking forward to new Megadeth, and we get the box set and then and a couple of reissues.
Yeah, and as far as those records are concerned, they're not the best.
There's no Avengers on that Endgame whatsoever.
No, not at all.
None of them participated.
Thank God.
But
those aren't the tip of the spear as far as Megadeth is concerned.
No, I am looking forward to the new album when it eventually gets here. But
of course.
The same thing happened to me earlier today. I don't have the story in front of me, but I saw a headline about Pearl Jam drops monumental release date. And I was like, oh, hey, maybe it's the new Pearl Jam album. And I click on it, and it was they wrote stuff for the Seattle Space Needle time capsule or something, and you can find out in 2062 what they wrote. It's like, all right, cool.
It's why I detest clickbait.
Yeah.
I hate headlines. We were just talking about certain websites.
So misleading.
Yeah, that's so misleading. That just go down.
It got me earlier today. I saw that, and I was like, oh, great, we've got the new Pearl Jam. We've got 40-something years to wait for a time capsule.
Yeah, there's a couple of websites out there that are just not good at the headlines.
Yeah.
You know,
the problem is they're really good at them.
They lie.
Well, you figure out after a couple
of
times.
They're good at the headlines. They're not good at the rest of it. That's the problem.
You figure out after a couple of times that you're just being suckered in now. Okay?
Right.
Sometimes I just click on it to see how bad their headline is compared to the story they have. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So maybe that's my fault, too. Ace Frehley was talking the other day about the guys from Kiss and can't even sell out Madison Square Garden anymore. But, you know, somebody tweeted out a picture. They were at the show. Madison Square Garden says sold out right there. They said, yeah, the show looked pretty sold out from the nosebleed seats I got the first day they went on sale. So
right. Yeah. But he was kind of, I don't know, giving Kiss some trash talk. And he said, now, when I was in the band, we used to do 3 nights at Madison Square Garden and sell them out. But, he was just giving them a little bit of a hard time, saying you can't believe they weren't able to sell him out. And I don't know, is he just bitter? Because he did also go on to say something like, I don't understand that he's offered his services for this final tour of theirs and they just haven't made the decision to bring me back.
That does suck. I was thinking about that earlier. It's like, you know, when some like even with Slash, it's like, can you imagine if those guys never got back together again? It's like, you know, do you always think there'd be like some kind of hole, some kind of void, you know?
Yeah.
And now with Ace and Kiss, did you guys see Kiss last time they were here?
No, I had no interest.
I'll tell you what, it's a good show, man. It's a great show. And that place was jam-packed. Mm. I mean, it was there wasn't empty seats to be had.
I'm in the camp of I saw Kiss for $20.
Yeah.
Back when it was all the original members.
Yeah.
So why would I pay $300 to see him voice track?
Well, one of sync. One of my favorite.
I don't need to see a lip sync for $300. I've seen the real thing.
Yeah. One of my top five shows, maybe top 10 or whatever, is that show at Tiger Stadium.
Yes, one of mine too.
Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah, 1996, when they put the makeup back on, first show.
Although I paid a hell of a lot more than $30 for that ticket. Oh, they got me bad.
But that was with Alice in Chains opening up and Sponge. And I guess STP was supposed to open up. I've talked to Gene about that before, too. It's like he said that, I told Scott you can go down, this is going to end one or two ways. So, and you know how Gene is. So.
Can I throw you just a cute little story from that show? So I was working in radio at the time because I am that old. And I asked the record label guy, I'm like, can you get tickets or do I need to buy them? And he said, well, I can get tickets guaranteed. There's plenty of seats, but you might be in the upper balcony. I don't know where the free tickets are going to be. So if you want premier seats, buy them. So the first time in my life, I paid more than what the tickets were worth. And I'm like, I've wanted to see Kiss since I was 2 years old. Yeah. Damn it. Yeah. So I paid $300 for tickets. And I was in the 11th row right in front of Ace. And I'm so excited, dude. I'm going to see Kiss. And I turn around and here comes the record label guy with everybody from my radio station. They sat two rows behind me. Three tickets. All of them. I paid $300 to be two rows closer. Like, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Well, on the bright side, look, think about how many concerts you saw for free.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I think about that, too, because I'm in the same boat with you. I think I paid to see Guns N' Roses because I want to make sure I was there.
Yeah. Right.
And who do I see? I see all my employees, all my fellow. I'm like, wait a second. But anyways, yeah, I'm with you. You know, that the funny story about that show was that, and I've told this before, but I asked Jerry Cantrell the biggest show you've ever played in Detroit. I knew the answer to it, of course.
Right.
Because it's got to be Kiss. Then he goes off into the story about how, they're looking across the crowd and everyone's, face painting like Gene and Paul and Ace and whatnot. And I guess at one point, Lane Staley looked over at him and said, hey, how come no one's dressed like us? So, always a funny story. But Papa Roach, we talked with Jerry Horton a couple weeks ago, right here on this very non-award winning podcast, and he did mention, I actually brought this up with him, I said, yeah, dude, Infest is going to be 20 next year, and apparently some other guys in this business followed my lead, because then they just keep asking the same questions I already asked,
right
after I asked it already.
They also probably don't listen to the podcast.
That's true.
Jacoby Shannon. I ask that every time.
But your podcast leads to headlines, and they do read the headlines.
That's right. Jacoby Shaddix was asked about that same question, the 20th anniversary coming up next year for Infest, and he didn't really give a lot of details of what they're going to do, but he said definitely 2020, we're going to be celebrating the 20th anniversary of our album Infest. He says, and so April 25th, 2020, we'll be having a celebration.
Yeah, Jerry said something along the lines, he doesn't think they're going to go out and tour and, play the record from front to back, but he did say that, they're going to do something. He goes, let's face it, he goes, that song,
Last Resort,
it put them on the map.
Yeah.
He goes, it's become kind of part of pop culture.
Yeah.
It's like, that's really a song that kickstarted their careers.
So. Yeah, and that's actually, Infest was actually their sophomore album, but it was their major label debut.
But as I was talking to him, and you'll appreciate this too, Steve, speaking of Zach Wilde, as I was talking to him, I'm like, hey, I think I met you guys for the first time on Ozfest. Did you guys do Ozfest? Of course, they don't remember meeting me or whatever, But I said, I think we took a picture behind Zach Wilde, who was sleeping on a couch. And he goes, I totally remember that.
That's awesome.
So, that's a great interview. You get a chance to go back and check out Jerry Horton. Hey, and last thing here, we got Elton John with this Rocket Man biopic. So what's up with that?
So Rocket Man is going to be having an R rating, unlike some of the, I guess kind of like a Motley Crue is definitely an R-rated movie. But
yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody, it went for PG-13, and so it was toned down a little bit. But Elton John reacts to the fact that this movie is going to be R, and he said some studios wanted to tone down the sex and the drugs so the film could get that PG-13 rating, but Elton John says, I just didn't lead a PG-13 life. He said, I didn't want the film packed with drugs and sex, but equally, everyone knows I had quite a lot of both of those during the 70s and 80s, so it didn't seem much of a point in making a movie that implied that after every gig, I just go quietly off to my hotel room.
Well, you know, that's the thing with the dirt is that people were like, you know, and some people, like, I remember reading this one article, and this guy's like, and the Me Too movement, how could they put out a movie like this? It's like, what are you supposed to do? Sugarcoat over everything you did? Just because times have changed so dramatically?
Right.
It's like, you know, if you're going to put out a movie like that, it should be somewhat based in reality of what was happening.
It made it more honest. You know, it's, you know, not necessarily something that, I mean.
Which is a funny thing to say, because from what I understand, there isn't a lot of honesty in that movie.
And which
you
one?
You haven't seen it. Quiet.
No, but I've read the headlines.
Yeah. In the dirt? In the dirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple stories that I'm sure were a little bit exaggerated.
Historically not accurate. Yeah. Timelines all screwed up.
Well, the timelines were screwed up in Bohemian Rhapsody, too.
Right. And Elton actually mentioned this, too. I thought it was brilliant of him to mention it. He said, yeah, not everything is completely accurate, especially the timelines. But he said, you can't take 50 years, crunch it into 2 hours, and expect everything to fit.
Sure.
And I was like, that's a good point.
That's a good point. But sometimes, like when the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, when it's like they're in the studio rehearsing for that Live Aid, and actually, in all actuality, they were on tour, and made it, you know, they kind of changed the story a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
that's
they
just
played
like
South Africa. They didn't even talk about that. The apartheid, and everybody was boycotting South Africa, and they were the ones playing South Africa. That's why Live Aid didn't want them on. They were trying to boycott them.
See, and that wasn't even in the story.
It wasn't even in the movie.
Yeah.
Instead, it was, oh, my God, Live Aid wants you guys so bad. But that's why they played in the afternoon, because Live Aid didn't want to book them because they had played South Africa.
Yeah.
So when they finally said, OK, you can play, instead of making them a headliner, they played in the middle of the sunshine.
Yeah. No, I vaguely remember that. Do you? I mean, seeing it live.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remember seeing it live.
Was that MTV or something, or did they broadcast the whole thing?
Well,
all
I didn't
long?
Have cable back then because, I, you know, I lived out in the sticks somewhere. Yeah. So it must have been on like every network or something.
Yeah, so, but yeah, sometimes when they change the story so dramatically, you're like, wait a minute, you know, I mean, you can kind of stick to a little bit of the truth, you know, but
yeah.
I don't know. I guess if I were supposed to make a story of my life, first of all, I wouldn't remember half of it, but
right.
As a lot of those guys didn't, so.
Yeah. Not to mention, we're in radio. It's our job to exaggerate.
Yeah.
Right?
That's why I'm 6'2", 6'2" on the radio. So
people can't see what we're talking about. We've got to really deliver it.
That's right.
Right.
All right. Deliver your socials because I'm done.
All right. Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
What do you got, Steve? SR Black.
Yeah, let's go with that. That's the Twitter one.
Speaking of radio people who can't remember, he doesn't even know who he is on Twitter.
That's right.
I just wish to God I didn't have to be on Twitter.
Yeah.
But
at Meltdown WRIF, and you can check that out on Instagram and Facebook and the whole thing, Twitter, at Talking Rock with One. Hey, thanks for checking out the podcast. I'm working on a guest right now of a band that's coming to town, and I'm going to miss them because I'm going to be on vacation. I can't believe the bands I'm missing because I'm on vacation. Bumblefoot is coming to town. I'll be gone. He's playing with Asia. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's playing like the local place doing all of his guitar doodling. He's playing with Asia, who I love. Won't be in town. And I'll tell you guys off the air who else is coming to town I'm trying to get an interview with. And now I'm not going to be able to see him. One of the best concerts I've seen in the last couple of years. So anyways, that's for another time. Thanks so much for checking out Talking Rock with Meltdown.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.